Hello and welcome back to the Wheel Talk podcast. My name is Abby Mickey and I'm joined today on this beautiful Monday by Lauren Rowney.
Hello, hello.
And Matt Deneef.
Hello, good to be back. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, you had a you were on vacation, taking some rest away from us.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why you'd want to do that, but...
You guys just tire me out so much. I just needed a week away, you know. No, we just had a family holiday up on the Gold Coast here in Australia and sat around on the beach in the warm weather and it was lovely. Didn't do much at all. It was exactly what we needed and I've come back feeling nice and refreshed and, yeah, ready to get stuck into it.
I just love that vacationing in winter in Australia means like going to the beach.
Yeah. Well, it's wild. Like it's down in Melbourne at the moment where I am. It's starting to get nice now, but it's been pretty miserable. But going up to the Gold Coast is, yeah, 25 degrees and warm and sunny, putting sunscreen on and, yeah, it's just nuts. Just a world away, really. So, yeah.
My dad, very much enjoyable. So, I'm from the Gold Coast for people who don't know this. And for some reason, my dad loves to send me weather forecasts. And it's like something you just don't do when someone is living in a country like Belgium. He's like, oh, yeah, look at the weekly forecast this week. I'm like, just stop it.
My dad does that too. Is that a dad thing? Matt, is that a dad thing? You're a dad.
I think so. I think I probably have a fascination with the weather.
Will you be sending Luca like weather updates whenever like...
You're from Melbourne.
When he goes to college.
Yeah.
So you have an obsession with the weather like I do because Melbourne is a bit like Belgium actually sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit weird, the weather here, and I think it's a kind of city-wide obsession with weather forecasts, and it's like the only topic of conversation when you have small talk with people is, oh, weird day today with the weather, or whatever, so.
And on that note, that's a good segue, actually, to the tour of Scandinavia, or just cycling in general this week.
I can't wait to get to things that I'm obsessed with, because I love it when conversations come full circle, so just for something for everyone to look forward to a little bit. Let's chat about the Tour of Scandinavia. Before we dive in, this episode is brought to you by the members of the Escape Collective. If you've ever thought about becoming a member, head on over to escapecollective.com/join and join up. We got awesome content on the website, tons of great podcasts, and special stuff if you're a member. You can join the Discord, which is super fun. And yeah, join us.
Join us.
That's escapecollective.com/join. And let's talk about the Tour of Scandinavia. There are a lot of talking points. What should we start with?
I think Matt got the peak of the week, right? Did you go for Annemiek? Who was it?
Or no, Abby? Not me.
Abby beat you to the punch. Did she? Who picks Sille?
Here, I can actually pull up the preview and tell you who we picked. Because for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, for most of the big races, I write a preview on Escape Collective and they're very in-depth. There's almost too much information in there, but one of the things that you can find is Wheel Talk podcast picks. So here we had Grace Yelvin with Cecily Utrecht-Ludwig. I picked Annemiek. Nice. Good pick for me. Matt picked Ricarda Bauerfeind. And yeah, you picked Ashley Moolman. And then we had Lorena Wiebes for a stage win from Gracie. Emma Norsgaard for a stage win for me. That may have been a little bit with the heart. Matt Deneef, Grace Brown, stage win on stage 4. I mean, that was low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And Lauren with Lizzie Dagdon with a stage win, which honestly, like, not a bad pick. She was riding pretty well. So we all picked decently okay. I was surprised, actually, that Ash wasn't riding better, but we'll dive into it. I think we should maybe start with some of the bigger talking points, one of which is that this was Annemiek van Vleuten's penultimate race, and she won it by the skin of her teeth. Like, literally 2 seconds. She won it by 2 seconds.
Almost by accident as well, I think. Like, not that you can ever win a bike race by accident, but her teammate, Sarah Gigante, who I'm sure we'll talk about, she posted on Instagram that Annemiek wasn't going for GC at the race, which is kind of funny to me that she wouldn't, but to kind of find yourself in that position with a strong TT. She didn't win a stage, but she found herself in the lead and then was able to defend it. And she didn't do anything spectacular for the week, I didn't think. She was just there and consistent and just good. And that was enough. And as you said, Abby, she just managed to hang on. That the last few Ks of the final stage and the pouring rain there with Celia up the road were pretty spectacular.
The fact that she didn't win a stage and yet she still won the overall, I think, for Annemieke, that's so out of the norm, and yet she's done it twice this year. Obviously, the Vuelta was a bit bigger than the Tour of Scandinavia, like in terms of competition there. But I still think with the form that Sile was on, that it was always going to come down to the TT. But I didn't expect the fight on the final day to be quite so close, I guess, because I expected there to be a larger margin between the two after stage four, to be honest.
I mean, like, based on time trial results this year, I mean, Annemieke isn't time trialing like we've known her to time trial, but to have, I mean, I don't want to jump around, but the time trial day, I'm looking forward to talking about that, because there were some standout performances, and something that Gracie's spoken before about is the margins in time trials. I think it was a 20-minute time trial in total. And, you know, Annemieke coming in third by, I don't know, 13 seconds down on Grace or so, 13 or 19 seconds down, and then the margins between her and fourth and fifth were pretty close. So I feel like for the riders that were there, contesting Annemieke van Vleuten's, is it her final tour or has she got another tour coming up?
She's going to finish off with the CMAC ladies tour.
Okay. But to go like head to head with her would be a pretty cool thing, right? Particularly if you're a young rider and you've been following Annemieke's career and, you know, over the years, just her sheer dominance in the sport, and then being able to get one up on her, getting close to her, must feel pretty good, even though we know she's coming to the end of her career. And I think she's really accepting that idea now and just trying to have fun and enjoy it. At least that's how it appears on social media. And like you said, Matt, I actually thought it would have been for Leanna Lippert this tour, but, you know, the cards fell the way they did, and Annemieke was there. And unfortunately, I think for Sile, the time trial is always something that lets her down a little bit. And it was a short time trial, but it was enough of a deficit that she couldn't just quite get that margin on her. And I do wonder, with the mountaintop finish, if there could have been more time made there, or, you know, your thoughts on that racing. Do you think she raced conservatively on the mountain stage, or?
Yeah, let's jump back a little bit. So maybe we go stage by stage a tiny bit. The first stage, there's not like a ton to talk about. Another Lorena Wiebes victory. She's up to 70 now after she won the third stage as well. But one of the major talking points on that stage was Sile and her late race attack that almost ended with a stage victory. And she came just so, so, so close and really just got caught, because if Wiebes sees a finish line, she's going to sprint. So it was only Wiebes and Elisa Balsamo, which, so awesome to see her kind of back up in the top end of the race after her crash in Ride London. And Sile, I think from the get-go, she was showing incredible form already in that first stage. So come the second stage, the mountaintop finish, or kind of like mountain plateau Mountainous. Finish. Yeah. It was no surprise to see her up there riding so well on that stage. And I think that her form, that on that climb, it would have been hard for her, even on the form that she's on, to try to get more time. It just wasn't that hard of a climb. Like, it's like 9K long, but then it plateaued out to the finish and kind of dipped and rolled a little bit. So there was tons of time for riders to get back on. We had Sile and Van Vleuten up the road at one point, and then they were caught by Kim Kadzow and Greta Marturano of Phoenix de Kooning. We're just going to call her Greta from now on. So Greta and Kim Kadzow caught the two of them, and the four of them came to the line together. It was an incredible performance by Kim Kadzow, and I can't wait to hear more about her from Matt Deneef, who's probably got some info up his sleeve. But Sile took the win, following up on the same, she won the same stage last year, but from a different direction. And I think from that direction, the climb suited more time gaps going into the rest of the race. But I think this direction that they hit that climb, there just wasn't enough climb to try to get more time. And even so, it's on a meek. So I think it was going to be a really hard win for her to take, but she still rode so well on the second stage, the first stage and the second stage and the last stage to win that mountaintop stage.
Yeah. And I think that it was a nice little storyline that it gave us with Cile missing out on the first stage on her birthday as well. And then the kind of vindication of the second day of, yeah, sparking that move that that got away on the climb and then being there in the group of four and then overhauling Van Vleuten in the sprint to win the stage on the same stage that she won the previous year. So, yeah, nice little storyline there. And I just had a note about Cile. I think, you know, she obviously hasn't had the best season of her career and it's been a frustrating one for her. But, gee, when she's in good form and in confident form and willing to attack, it's so good to watch. She's such an exciting rider compared to when she just sits back in the bunch. Like when she's on the move and she was attacking, what, three of the four road stages here and won two of them. Yeah, just such a good thing for the race.
Yeah, exactly. And for women's cycling, she's a really exciting rider, like you said, Matt, and she always lays it on the line when she does have the form and confidence. And it's so nice to see riders like that back it up at the end of the season. I mean, with the bronze medal at the World Championships, she was just, her interview was fantastic after that. It was just like winning gold almost for her. And, you know, that's how I see Cassia Nieuwendyma, as one of those exciting riders too, who would just throw everything at it. And, you know, on that last stage, the chances of her taking the GC were so slim. But then when she pulled that last attack, it was just beautiful. So good to see her in good form and spirits again. And the camaraderie between her and her teammates was nice to watch too.
Yeah, I like that comparison with Kasia too. I think, to me, both of them are riders that are appealing to watch because they're not prolific winners. They're not your Van Vleutens. They're not your Wiebeses who win a lot and you kind of get used to it. They're riders who have to fight so hard to get a win. And so when we see them on the attack, you kind of, you're supporting them, you're rooting for them, you're barracking for them. And yeah, to see that is great. And then to see Cile win and in a home race as well. Yeah, it was just very cool.
I think just touching on Larina there, I was having to think about it yesterday and I want your opinion on this, but would we say that, okay, Larina is fast becoming the greatest female sprinter of all time in women's cycling, but the most diverse sprinter in terms of, I've been trying to rack my brain as to other sprinters who've had the climbing capacity that she has, like to win these super, super hard stages that normally you would think when we look at the men's peloton, it's not so much, but I don't want to compare the two. But for me, Larina, I know Giorgia Bronzini, there were times in her career that she could climb very well too, even in a Yoko Tuitenberg, but at this capacity, I don't think so.
Her win on stage three was incredible. Like, I feel like that for her, we pigeonhole her a lot into being a pure sprinter, but she's definitely not. And I think it's just goes to show what an incredible bike racer she is and how much she wants to win. Like, we heard it said over and over at the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift that, like, she just wants to win. Like, she just wants to win bike races. And I think that being the progression of her career, she's always been a really good sprinter. And I think now it would be impossible to say that she's not one of the best female sprinters that we've ever had. Just in the amount of wins that she's racked up in the last 3 years, even. Like, even if you just look back 3 years, that's where most of her wins have come. And she's at 70 now. But she's also just developing as a rider. She's still really young. I think we forget how young she is because she's has so many wins under her belt and so many, like, high-profile wins as well, that she's still very much kind of finding who she is on the road and what type of rider she is. So I think while we would say, okay, she wins in the sprints a lot, she's a sprinter, she's so much more versatile than that. And we saw that on the stage of the Giro Donna, where she was second behind Van Vleuten when Van Vleuten was solo, that she won on that that short poppy, she was second on that short poppy climb, but also her acceleration coming into that climb was just incredible. And the same goes for this third stage, where she said it wasn't so much a sprint as like a 1 minute effort. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, it's crazy to me that she's not like on the track more, actually, with the power that she has.
I was just thinking that when you were saying like 1 minute effort, she'd be phenomenal. But again, yeah, she's a young rider. So I feel like there's just some riders who can be almost chameleons in their lifespan of a professional athlete. Because if she continues on for another 10 years, say, she could, maybe Tour of Flanders is a huge goal for her, but she needs to maybe work on a little bit more of this and then take away a little bit from the sprint. I don't know, but
even if she takes away 2% from her sprint, she's still the best mm-hmm. sprinter in the women's peloton by a mile.
Just to put a punctuation mark on what you guys are saying, I had a look at some stats on on Weavers, as I like to do, after your race report, actually, Abby, on Escape Collective, about her reaching 70 wins, and just to see where that put her all time. Because mm-hmm. as you said, she's young, she's only 24, so a lot of racing still ahead of her if she wants to. She's 11th on the all-time list already at 70 wins. There's only two active riders ahead of her, with Van Vleuten at 104 wins and Vos at the top with 248. 248. If Weavers takes five more wins, she'll draw equal with Leontien van Morsel in 10th spot. So it's pretty incredible at 24. Who knows how much longer she'll race for, but she'll get well up into the top five of all time, I'd say.
Can anyone do rapid fire math? How many wins would she have to take if she races for the next 10 years? How many wins a year would she have to take to beat Voss with all?
Wait, Matt, a question for you. Does that include cyclocross for Voss or just road?
This is just on the road. Road only.
Just on the road. Good God. Sorry.
Wins on the road. Yeah. On the sprinter question, Lauren, mm-hmm. the only sprinters ahead of her on the list are, that I can see, Giorgia Bronzini with 94 mm-hmm. wins, Kirsten Wild with 109.
Oh, of course.
And then yeah. Ina Teutenberg with 149.
149 for Ina.
Assuming we don't count Voss as a sprinter.
No, she's definitely not.
She's not.
Okay, so that math shouldn't be too hard. She needs
170 wins. 17 a year.
17 a year.
For 10 years.
That's totally doable for her. It's completely doable.
I think we could go on so many tangents right now. Like when a young rider is just so successful in such a short period of their career. Like it was kind of like she came on the scene. It was bam, this is Lorena Weavers. That they get to a point where by the time they're 29, 30, they're like, yep, yeah, I've done it all. I'm out. I've earned my money. I'm going to go do other things.
I don't see her getting like burnt out on the sport at all anytime soon. She just loves it so much. You can see it in all of her interviews how level-headed she is. She's not overly emotional in any which direction. She's just kind of the way that she is. But she also just has so much fun racing her bike, and you can tell like in the way that she races, the way that she moves. I just think I'm just so excited to keep watching her win 17 wins a year for the next 10 years.
Let's start the campaign for it. Weavers for GOAT.
All right. Yeah. No. Boss forever.
Is that sacrilege?
Okay. Can we backtrack a little bit? Because Matt, I want you to tell us who Kim Kadzow is.
I'm going to love this because I did some reading myself this morning only because she stayed at my friend's B&B here in Belgium last year, and they told me about this rider and who she was, and she was going to be really good. She signed with Jumbo Visma because they saw her numbers and were like, whoa. But Matt, you fill in the rest of the details.
Oh, it sounds like you know more than I do. I just did some reading today because I'd obviously seen her around and that, but I was very impressed with her over the last week and wanted to learn more. But yeah, she's a 21-year-old from New Zealand. She started as a triathlete, only really turned to cycling properly in 2021. She won the New Zealand Under-23 Time Trial Championships that year. Raced with the Continental team the following year, where she got fifth in the Mont Ventoux one-day race. So Cavalli, Koppenberg, Musique, and Royac is ahead of her. So some of the world's best climbers. And then, yeah, I think she was on the move in Glasgow Worlds a few weeks ago. She was on the attack in the circuits mm-hmm. there. And then, yeah, she had a third on stage two here in Scandinavia. So, yeah, just 21, very new to the sport, great climber, huge future ahead of her. So, a very exciting prospect for New Zealand cycling and for, yeah, the sport in general, I guess. Keen to hear what, what you've heard.
Oh, I was just... I was wondering why she didn't finish up higher on the GC because her results were so consistent through the week, but it was stage one, I believe, that let her down. And I think that was probably just due to positioning on that stage. And like you said, Matt, she's very new to the sport. This is something that my friends mentioned to me when this very strong young Kiwi was staying with them, was that the thing that she was going to struggle with most was this transition to riding in a big peloton in Europe. She's got the engine, she's got the capacity, but yeah, that's something we've spoken about before. When you come into the sport a little bit later, not that she's too old, but still those skills need to be learned. It's confidence, it's time, it's mentorship within the team, and it seems like Jumbo Visma has plans for her on the long term. They, like I mentioned, they signed her because her numbers were phenomenal, apparently. And they see her as a future talent. So it was just great to see her getting her first World Tour podium. And she had a decent time trial too, a top 10, I believe.
Yeah, 8th. Very good result.
Yeah, let's talk about the time trial a little bit, because that was obviously the kind of one of the pivotal stages when it came to the GC, with Annemiek getting some time on Cecily Ojeplugwik and moving up into the leadership. Another awesome time trial by Grace Brown to take the stage, and she took it a pretty massive margin on such a short time trial, 19 seconds over Amber Crack, but still a really great ride by Amber as well. And massive shout out to Loretta Hansen for an incredible ride to finish fourth on the day, and seeing her sit in the hot seat for a minute was pretty awesome.
That was the best point of the whole day. I was just like, oh my god, go Loretta. It's not often that such a super domestique gets a chance, one, to have a crack in a race itself, but in a time trial, because often, depending when the time trial lies in a tour, you know, the DS will say, look, just, you know, tap the legs out. But they gave, gave her the green light and said, go for it. And it must have been a bit of a power course, I guess.
It was pretty much like a time trial specialist type of course, like relatively flat with some technical corners, but you could stay in the skis pretty much the entire time. And it was definitely a course for the most aerodynamic and riders who really work on this discipline, which you could tell when you were watching Grace. She looked so fluid on the bike, just like so... You know, like when you're watching a time, I said something like this in my race report, but when you're watching a time trial specialist and you can tell, okay, like they're going to win today. And the time I remember it most vividly was Linda Williamson in the World Championships in Richmond, where like I've never seen her look so comfortable on a time trial bike. But you can also see it like whenever there's a moto shot of Ellen Van Dyke from the back on her time trial bike, the body just looks so still, and Grace Brown just looked so comfortable out there. Like she was just kind of cruising. And yeah, it was a great ride for her. And to take this win after getting second at the World Championships is not going to be much of a consolation prize, but it's still a World Tour victory for Grace. And after kind of a roller coaster of a year, I think she will be really happy with it.
Yeah, she came in as the clear favorite to win the stage, and yeah, harnessed that pressure. She said she thrived on that pressure and I felt quite confident that I could win today, and she did that quite comfortably. And yeah, like you said, I think it won't make up for the silver medal at Worlds, but yeah, to be the favorite and to win the stage, and I think bigger than that as well, for her team to have won 3 of the 5 stages for the week, I think that'll be a
best
real
result
boost
of the year for the team, I would say.
We've been kind of hard, I think, on FDJ Suez this year, mostly because they had such an incredible season last year that they have had a hard time topping it. And I think going into the year, I especially saw them as being one of the big teams that was going to challenge SC Works and Lidl Trek for that kind of world tour level victories, like just the amount of victories that those teams amass. Although I think we need to talk about how Lidl Trek have had quite a disappointing season this year. But yeah, FDJ Suez, like, they've really come into the end of this season just flying. And I think part of that is that SC Works maybe have burned themselves out a little bit. I mean, obviously, like, Wiebes still looks like she's on flying form, but if you look at, like, what happened with Marlon Roeser at the World Championships, and that Demi is now taking a little bit of a step back to kind of just rest a bit at the end of the season, I think that, yeah, maybe SC Works have burned themselves out a tiny bit. But FDJ Suez, I love to see them winning because it's just such an incredible program. Like, I talk about it all the time, but I just love the way that they take care of their riders. And you could tell, like, when Sile won the final stage and her and Grace just, like, kind of on a pile on the ground, like, they just all really care about each other and care about racing for each other. And so it was awesome to see, like, Grace take the win when the team otherwise would have probably been a little bit bummed with the loss of the leader's jersey. When Sile, like, an incredible TT from her still. She's just not much of a time trialist. She lost 52 seconds to Grace, which put her second in the general classification by 17 seconds. And that was always going to be a really hard amount of time to make up on that final stage because there just wasn't a ton of opportunity. Like, those final circuits were hard and there were climbs in those circuits that you could take advantage of, and we saw her do that, but it was still too close to the finish for her to be able to pull back enough time. 2 seconds to be exact.
So close at the end. I think everyone was counting the seconds until the bunch crossed the line.
Yeah, and I mean, she only got that 2 second margin because she got the bonus seconds from winning the stage. And then it was really kind of lucky for Van Vleuten that, because when Sile attacked and everybody just kind of looked at Van Vleuten, like, it wasn't, her attack was like, I was cackling a little bit when she attacked because Movistar was going so hard on the front and she was going just a tiny bit faster. But, like, the second that it was her attacking, everyone just looked at Van Vleuten like, okay, this is on you. And the speed in the bunch just plummeted. And, like, Van Vleuten was doing all of the work to try to bridge back with Leona Libert on her wheel, which I just was like, all right, like, bold strategy here. But then it was the classic Lorraine Wiebes. As soon as she saw the finish line and started sprinting, all Van Vleuten had to do was finish in the wheels. Exactly. So it worked out just perfectly. I think, like, yeah, if anybody was watching that, like, what, why is Van Vleuten working, why is Lorena, or why is Leona Lippert on her wheel, it was just the sprinters are gonna sprint and that will close the distance for them. But yep. It was still just, like, such a great win from Sile to take the second stage of the race for her, and also to win on home soil as a Dane was pretty awesome.
Yep, can't argue with that. And the pouring rain at the end there as well. So good. The camera shots of Anja Lau being the last of the breakaway riders, you know, just absolutely thumping down rain. And then she gets caught and then Sile's attacking. Just very atmospheric. And Sile made some comment about that in her interview afterwards. Like, oh, welcome to Denmark or whatever, you know.
We're Vikings or something.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
She's such a character. Her interview, like, after she won the second stage, the mountain stage, was so bland, too. And I was like, oh, man, that, you know, it's a hard effort when Sile can't even give an interview.
It's funny with her, like, when she's on, she gives some of the greatest interviews, like, we've just ever seen in the sport. Like, hands down, male, female, doesn't matter. Best interviews ever. But then other times, and I saw this a bunch at the tour where she wasn't doing as well as she has, she's just can be very muted and very understated and very unanimated as well. It's quite interesting to me that she has those two gears, because I think a lot of people see her as this very animated, all the time, extroverted person. And she does have that gear, but I think that there's also a lot more to her. And it's interesting to see those two sides in the space of one race as well.
I know her decently well off the bike. And the first gear is kind of who she is normally. Like, she's an introvert, doesn't really hang out with people very often. She's pretty quiet. She's, yeah, very understated. And so I like seeing that side of her, because I think if she was always putting on that face, and I mean, it is great for the sport and those interviews are fantastic, but I worry about people expecting that from her at all times, because that would be exhausting for her to live that life and always have that mask on, because she is really a very quiet person, very focused, very driven, and she likes being that outgoing kind of like face of women's cycling sometimes. But I think for her, it also is a bit overwhelming at times. And so, yeah, I love that people get to see the true version of herself, or at least who she is off the bike, a little bit when she's on the bike, like after the second stage.
I know I speak for you as well, Abby. I'm not sure about you, Lauren, but I know as introverts, it often takes a lot of effort to put yourself out there and to be animated and expressive. And you often just do need time afterwards to kind of come down and recoup your energy. So I could definitely see that if she is an introvert at heart, that would take a lot out of her to be the smiling, bubbly, effervescent person that we know her through our interviews as.
But I mean, an awesome win for her to win like both stages, and for Grace to take a stage, and then, yeah, Lorena to take two stages. So I think if you're looking at the results only, like just the stage winners, it might have been not as exciting a race as maybe we'd thought. But, man, were there some really incredible points in this race. And Celia's attack on the final stage, for me, just kind of wrapped up what was a really awesome 5 days of racing, with not only did we have some very deserving winners, we also had some riders sneak in to the top 10 overall that I think are worth keeping an eye on for the future. And one of the great things about a race like this, like after the Worlds, after the Tour, when the season is slowing down a little bit and some of the big riders are taking some time away from the bike, is you have riders like Amber Crack able to land third overall on the podium after an incredible time trial and just consistent riding. That's an awesome result for her, the Jumbo Visma rider. And she's been an interesting one to watch for a long time, but this is kind of the first big GC result that we've seen from her. And then Leanna Lippert finished fourth overall, which she's just, I mean, she is Movistar's future next year after Van Vleuten retires in just a couple weeks. So pretty interesting to see like where she's going to go from here. And kind of she's in this weird like no man's land right now, where she's still working for Annemiek, but she sees the future coming and she is the leader pretty soon. And so I think for her, fourth overall is still like a decent result. And Grace with her TT win snuck into fifth. So yeah. And I mean, still like looking at the top like 15. So we've got like Tamara Dronova snuck in there with the 12th overall. She keeps being super consistent, a really interesting rider. If you didn't see Matt's feature on her over the Tour de France Femme avec Swift, I highly recommend that you check it out, because it was a really awesome piece that he wrote. And yeah, some interesting ones.
Yeah, Amber Crack is quite interesting to me. I didn't know much about her, and I didn't realize that she was a former rower and a world champion actually as a rower. So which would explain why she's got such a good engine and such a good time trialist. She only took her first pro win just a couple of weeks ago at Le Périgord, with a solo win. And I think, yeah, some good signs for her. And like you said, Abby, really cool to see riders like her getting the opportunity to shine, as you know, later in the season. And I'm excited to see what she can do in the years ahead, for sure. She's with Jumbo Visma next year as well, I believe, so one to keep an eye on.
Which is actually, I don't know if we want to talk about it, but it seems like a few riders are leaving Jumbo Visma at the moment, and there was a bit of a discussion online about that. But she's obviously signed through to the end of next year. But yeah, with the transfer season open, there was I don't know, someone commented and said, what's happening with that team at the moment? Is anyone left but Voss?
I think that's maybe a little bit over dramatic. There's a lot of riders on that team that are really happy to be on that team. Brianna Marquez is obviously thriving in that environment. Anna Henderson really loves that team as well. Like, I would be shocked if she were to leave. I think, like, Corinne leaving is something that we probably could have foreseen coming. But I don't think there's been more riders exiting that team than other teams. I feel like talking about like Lidl Trek on the heels of this race, kind of some great rides. Like Lizzie looked like she was doing pretty well in the beginning, the first couple stages. And obviously Loretta had a great TT, but Lidl Trek have had like a pretty disappointing year as the team that they are with the riders that they have and the budget that they have. They've had, you know, the first couple years they came onto the scene and they were already winning huge races like Paris-Roubaix, Femme of X-Swift and stuff like that. And the women's, Lizzie taking the women's tour right after having a baby and everything. But this year they've really struggled. And I don't know what it is at the team that is,
injury and illness.
They've had some really bad luck. I mean, like Elisa Balsamo was out for a really long time after crashing in Ride London, and that was
Longoborghini.
Yeah, Longoborghini's had one hell of a year, just constantly sick, and we've not really seen much from Guy Riolini since the Giro. She's been laying low a bit, and I think the team made the right call not sending her to the tour, but it did mean that, you know, we just haven't seen a ton from them this year, and I'm curious to see what their new signings will mean for the future of the team. They've lost some of their core riders. Obviously Taylor Wiles is retiring at the end of the year, and I think that it will be interesting to see how the team goes with the new signings that they have announced so far. A lot of them are young riders, like the Canadian twins that they just announced, which is really exciting. But they're primarily on the mountain bike side, so I'm curious to see how they're going to transition onto the road. But I don't know, am I like misplaced by being a bit disappointed with how the teams raced this year?
I think it's just circumstantial. You know, you think about they're big winners. If we look at last year, Elisa Balsamo wearing the world championship jersey, that was last year, 2022, yes, she won a ton of races first year with Trek, and she was, I think, their number one winner. Lizzie Deignan, who has continued to win, has obviously been off on maternity leave for a while. She's just getting back to her best again, so I'm sure next year she'll be flying. Ellen van Dijk, a key player in the team, has been out as well. That's had a massive impact, I'm sure.
Brody Chapman as well.
And then, of course, yeah, Brody Chapman's left FDJ to go there, but has had also an awful year with just injury and illness. And it's just,
she was riding so well before she crashed in that early spring classic, and then it's kind of just been a roller coaster since then. I think one of the big disappointments was that they didn't take advantage of the new maternity leave rules to fill Ellen's spot with another name, because I think that with the amount of riders that they have on the roster, the amount of races that there are in the calendar this year, and the fact that their riders have been sick all year, that means that empty spot that they could have filled when Ellen left for maternity leave was very empty. Like, had they filled that role with a rider that could have, obviously they can never replace Ellen van Dijk, but say they picked up one of the riders that was left high and dry after the B&B hotels fiasco, or any rider that like could have been picked up that from like a lower level team or anything, that would have at least taken a little pressure off a couple of the riders that I think that they've massively overworked this season. So I think that that's kind of part of the problem from my eyes.
I do think that they will look back on the season and see that there are some positives to come from it. I mean, obviously the emergence of Guy Riolini is a big one. Sharon Van Anroy as well has really stepped up this year with her win at Binder, was it, early in the season? And they're both with Lidl Trek through 2025. So, yeah, some great young riders to build around in the years to come. Lizzie's been great in the last few months. And yeah, they've still won a handful of races as well along the way. So I think overall, yeah, a frustrating season for a bunch of reasons, as we've discussed. But there are positives to take. And I think they'll, you know, after the off season, they'll come back next year and feel like there's a lot to work for.
I think they will be coming in like just flying into next season. After all the bad luck this year, you'd think they've got it out of the way. So I'm excited to see how that goes. Actually, speaking of maternity leave, it was just announced on Instagram that Julie Leth is pregnant, which is awesome.
What?
Yeah, Julie Leth is pregnant and she is planning to come back. Her goal is the Madison on the track with Amelie Dederichsen next year. So that's really awesome to see. I mean, I know like she's wanted to start a family for some time, and Uno X has just made it such a integral part of their system that their riders can have a baby and come back. I just saw Joss Loudon in Girona with her tiny, 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 tiny baby. So really excited for Julie and can't wait to see her come back next summer. It's really cool.
This is just, I've got a big smile on my face, but it's just crazy to think that this, like, I mean, knock-on effects since Lizzie and Trek, you know, she left SD Works basically because they didn't think it was possible to combine the two and for her to come back at the age she was and still be as good, if not better, I would argue, in a lot of ways. And there's so many riders now, and it's just amazing to me how quickly they bounce back too. So women are just amazing,
women are
really
amazing. I'll talk about that when we talk about what we're obsessed with, because I've changed mine already. While it's recording this episode, we won't come full circle, although I do love the rain.
I just have a couple quick riders to talk about really quickly, if I can.
Yeah, go for it. Please.
Elise Shabby, QOM classification, attacking lots.
Always.
Big fan. Fifth QOM jersey of her career. Just wanted to get that in there. Just love watching her race.
She's very consistent.
Yeah, she's so good. And I mentioned earlier, but so good to see Sarah Gigante back racing, her first race in a full year. She hasn't really talked about why she wasn't racing. The most I've heard is health complications, and you know, whether or not she wants to talk about that, that's totally on her, and you know, we'll respect her privacy, obviously. But just great to hear that she's doing well and back racing. And I know she sometimes listens to this podcast, so if you're listening, Sarah, great to see you racing again. And hope you're doing great.
Definitely awesome to see Sarah back in the race and races, and yeah, hope that we get to see her back on the road a lot in the coming months, or I guess next year, because the season's almost up. We've got GP de Plouay under a new name that's very long, and I will know it by the next time we record this episode, because it's not the same as it was last year. They changed it last year, and then they've changed it again this year. So that is coming up this weekend, one of my favorite one days, and is usually a kind of build up to the World Championships. It's the last one day before the World Championships usually, but because the Worlds was earlier this year, it's not. So I think that will open it up to some really exciting racing from some teams that are maybe lacking a little bit this year. Maybe we'll see another Sile win, actually. But check escapecollective.com for a preview on that and some Wheel Talk podcast picks. And should we talk about what we're obsessed with?
Yes, you want to go first. I want to hear it.
Well, I was going to say I'm obsessed with the rain, because as anyone who's watched the Vuelta will know, it is, or the Andorra World Cup this weekend, which was a bonkers. We were on the ground in the dirt for the women's race on Sunday. And it was just, oh my God, the mud. I just felt so bad for everybody racing. And but anyway, I was going to say I was obsessed with the rain, but then we were talking about maternity leave and women coming back. Love, I'm always obsessed with babies. My God, they are so cute. But I've been watching for the last week, every single day at 7 o'clock, we turn on the World Athletics Championships. And we've been watching all of the track and field. And it's been just like so cool to watch. And I am so obsessed with the sprinters on the American side. There's obviously Sha'Carri Richardson, who's like just a character and is just so exciting. But there's some other sprinters that are just so incredible to watch. And I've like spent the week just like scoping their Instagrams and stalking them, and just like they're so cool, and I just think they're amazing. But there's the women's 4x400 was the one of the final events on Sunday evening, and one of the women who ran for GB just had a break to have a baby and has come back stronger than ever. And there was a post-race interview that they did, the four of them, on Eurosport, and the three women on the team with her were just praising the fact that she's made it. It's not just in cycling that women are seeing that it's possible to have a baby and come back to sport, and that she's one of the women pioneering that in track and field, and that she was able to go and have her son and come back and win a bronze medal at the World Championships in the 4x400 was really, really cool to see. And just the amount that the team backed her for that was also really cool. And I'm just like, I'm totally obsessed with track and field and like the women on the track. My God, they are so cool. There's this Dutch girl, Femke Bol. Holy shit. Okay, if you haven't watched any of the Athletics World Championships, just go on YouTube and look up the 4x400. And Femke Bol, who is, she's a hurdler. She won gold in the 400 meter hurdles, I think. But she ran the anchor position in the relay, and holy crap, it was unreal. I didn't think the Dutch could actually run. I made a joke to Tom's about how the one sport that I watched that the Dutch aren't good at, and then they went and won the 4x4. Spoiler. But anyway, that's what I'm obsessed with.
You go, Matt. I'm deciding. Got a few things.
Mine is kind of an attempt to not be obsessed with something, which sounds weird, but it kind of circles
is it
back.
Healy?
No, just kidding. No, it's not. It's not Maddie Healy. It circles back to a conversation we had a couple months ago about deleting social media and how nice that must be. And as we talked at the start, I was away on holiday for the last week, and I used that as an opportunity to try and delete the last remnants of social media off my phone. So yeah, I haven't had Facebook on there for a while. I deleted Twitter, I deleted Instagram, deleted Reddit. I took work Slack off my phone. I made sure I put my phone at night in a different room to where I was sleeping, really making a concerted effort to try and detox myself from unhelpful dopamine hits throughout all hours of the day and night. And it just feels really good. I knew it would, but it's just so hard to extricate yourself. And I always kind of told myself that I needed to be on Instagram and Twitter for work stuff. And look, I probably do, but I'm going to try and make an effort to do that when I log onto the computer at work, rather than just having it on my phone constantly and using Instagram to fill a gap of 3 seconds while waiting for the microwave to finish or whatever it might be. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm hoping that by putting it out into the world, I kind of, make myself do it. Held accountable. Exactly right. So it feels...
Next week, I'm going to ask.
Yeah, please do. So it feels really good, and I want to continue that because I think, I think we'd probably all agree that less social media in our lives would probably be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said to you guys, it would be a bit tricky with your work. And the way that I've dealt with it with my work is, like you were saying, Matt, I just use the laptop for social media, or I try to, and then delete the apps on the phone because I don't necessarily need it, because you can schedule everything on the desktop. So, yeah, for that reason, or you can look at things as well. If you need to post for work reasons, that's kind of how you do it. But it is a hard thing. And I see my partner, like I've said, he's a passive user. So he just looks at stuff. And he never puts anything out into the world. He's just consuming, which I find irritating, particularly if he's in bed and he decides to scroll on his phone. And I'm like, stop it. I'm reading my book. I can see the blue light. But yeah, that's definitely difficult. I've been spending a bit of time on my phone. because I'm a bit obsessed with Vinted at the moment. I like buying secondhand baby clothes on there, children's stuff, all that kind of stuff. Maternity wear as well, because you only wear it very short term. So I've been looking at that, and it's, yeah, I don't know. People in Australia won't be familiar with it because I think it's European Vinted. It's really big in Belgium and France, and I'm selling stuff on there too. So I'm looking at my phone a bit more now with all the notifications and whatnot.
That's super cool. I have a rule where if I buy a new piece of clothing, I have to replace, like I have to take something out of the closet.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, because I mean, otherwise it gets full very quickly.
You'd like Vinted, and you have really nice stuff. Oh, so you could probably get a good buck for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I wonder if it exists in Andorra. I bet I could find some like wild stuff on there.
Yeah, well, I've had people in, I think, one Spanish person. I'm sending something to Italy today. So there's a few more European countries that are into it, but it's definitely,
I'll look it up.
Definitely a fun thing. You'd
yeah,
like it.
I really love, like, so Andorra is obviously like a shopping destination for mm-hmm. a lot of people, which means that like around this time of year, they have like crazy sales and stuff. So last 1 year ago, I went to like a couple of the baby stores and got some stuff on sale, including like Lila has.
Didn't you get a
Stella McCartney? Because it was like on sale in like the bargain bin, and I was like, there's like Stella McCartney, and it has mushrooms all over it in the bargain bin. So Lila will be dressed in designer sweaters. but yeah, it's like it's nuts being up here. It would be so cool to try to get some vintage stuff or like thrifted stuff, because there's just so much consumage that happens around me, and it makes my skin crawl. The amount of people that come here just to buy cigarettes
and alcohol, yeah. Right, as well, or just
cigarettes and alcohol and really fancy bags.
Andorra is like this weird place, right, because you've got the beautiful nature sort of stuff that we see, that, you know, you go and do your trail running and there's that side of it, but then there's that, yeah, like
it depends where in the country you are, because if you're in like Andorra La Vella or like Pasta La Casa, those are the two main hubs that are close to borders. So like Pasta La Casa is really close to the French border, and then Andorra La Vella is only 2 hours from Barcelona, so like really close to Spain, to like many people who live in Spain. So a lot of people come up on the weekend from that area to like buy their tax-free cigarettes and alcohol. So the weekends will just be swarming, and then the weeks are like beautiful because it's so quiet throughout the whole country. And it is just like where we are, we don't really ever go to La Vella or Pasta La Casa. We're in this like incredible little valley that doesn't have like any shopping or grocery stores. And like one really awesome little coffee shop, but we're just surrounded by mountains. So it's like, it is a really weird country, and it's only like 40 minutes from one border to the other. So it's like really not big at all, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The World Cup this weekend was super cool. Seeing like a ton of people there to just watch the bike racing, and yeah.
I'm so jealous. Not for the weather, and the downhill's canceled,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because of wind, but I heard post-break. From people on the ground, yeah, that it was like a lot to do about nothing, because the wind wasn't okay. Actually that bad, but they just like preemptively got nervous. Yeah, but the Vuelta is coming through today. All the roads are shut. There's like two roads in the country, and they're closing them both down for the race.
Bloody bike riders.
They're so entitled, you know, like they just think they can come in. Yeah, I'm gonna pick Lila up from daycare, and we're gonna walk over to the main climb of the day and watch everyone ride by, and it'll be sweet. It's only like the first climb, the Ordino climb, is like 200 meters from the door of her daycare, so we're just gonna kind of like make our way over. It'll be cool, and there's actually sun coming out now. Anyway, this is a good episode. Should we wrap it up? We'll be back next week to talk about GP de Plouay, or whatever it's called these days. I feel the same way about the men's race that was going on over the week. That's usually the Eneco Tour, but they've changed the name like 10 times. And now I'm just like, no, it's just the Eneco Tour. I don't know. I can't keep track of when you change the name this many times. But yeah.
I think Plouay will just be it's Plouay. Just
like, but it? But that's not even like, it's still in Plouay. So technically mm-hmm. calling it the GP de Plouay, even if that's not the name, it's still like, it's still a Grand Prix-ish that's in Plouay. Oh, I love this race so much. It was one of my favorite races that I did when I was racing because the course is so fun. And anyway, we'll be back next week to talk about it, hopefully with Gracie. But thanks you two for your time and for the chats. Have a great week.